Hello and welcome to Rick's Martini Bar. I'm Jerry McCarty here with Rick Farmelo and Amanda Raymond. Cheers, everybody.
Beach Boys.
Oh.
Why are we listening to the Beach Boys?
We're listening to the Beach Boys because it's Brian Wilson's 69th birthday.
Happy birthday, Brian.
Heroes, Brian Wilson.
And so we thought we'd talk in the podcast today. And those of you that have sent emails saying you love the Rick stories, this is going to be one long Rick story. So Rick has met Brian Wilson several times. In fact, has worked with him. And Amanda has met him. And I have met him. We all have met Brian Wilson.
He's a very nice guy.
And we'll talk about Brian Wilson. No, we're not going to keep it nice.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah. And this is what we listen to. We're listening to Pet Sounds.
This is the best Beach Boys album. It's one of the best albums ever.
Beach Boys album.
My favorite.
Rick worked
album
on
ever.
Smile, right? You worked
well,
on the video.
A little bit of the new version, not the old Lucky Old Son. I worked on Lucky Old Son. Yeah, I did animation for his live show, and it ended up on the DVD.
Yeah.
So if any of you want to go out and get that DVD, you'll see some of my animation. It's very low budget, but
cool.
It was fun. So I have stories about that and when I first met him. But anyway, everyone knows who he is. He's the leader of the Beach Boys, and they've been around since 1961.
Well, let's just talk about, for those that don't know, about what a troubled soul he is, and that being 69 is pretty amazing for him. Is Beach Boys started in 61. I saw where'd they grow up in?
Hawthorne,
California. But he went to El Camino Community College, and he was a psychology major.
Yeah.
Which I read that, I'm like, Amanda, what was your major?
Psychology.
Was it really?
Yes.
Okay, everybody.
Where's your hit records?
Everybody but Amanda. Well, you went to Syracuse.
Yes.
Okay, so you're exempt. Community college, which I went to, people that are in psychology class in community college are generally there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that he is turned out the way he is, which is pretty, he's got mental problems, right?
Yeah.
I mean, despite all the drugs, before the drugs.
He had emotional problems, I think, before that. And I think the pressures of having to put three albums a year. And he needed to come up with hits because it was them and the Beatles. Them and the Beatles were the two biggest bands in the world at the time, and they're competing with each other in a friendly way.
Yeah.
They were all friends. And when Paul McCartney would come over to the United States, he'd go over and see what Brian was doing, and Brian would check out what the Beatles were doing. So they kind of fed off each other, trying to see who could climb up the charts.
Yet it was
quicker and stay there longer.
Weird, because Capitol is where the Beatles recorded,
with Capitol,
and the Beach Boys. And they both recorded there. And I'm going to let Amanda tell her story of her first introduction to the Beach Boys. But my first introduction to the Beach Boys was one piece of vinyl. And back then, it was Surfing USA on vinyl, 45. And the flip side of it was Shutdown.
Oh, okay.
Two great songs. Got to be two top 10 songs, mm-hmm. top 20. I mean, and I was like, why would they put two really good songs on the A and B side of this, even as young as I was? And I'm like, then I was thinking today that they were both with Capitol. The Beach Boys did that, and the Beatles did that.
Particularly when they also, the 45 you had probably wasn't an original from 1964.
Oh, it was. It was Capitol 64.
Because sometimes they would do, when they reissued them, they do two A-sides. Yeah. They're both hits.
Yeah, my brother Mike he's got the originals, Capitol Orange, from the 60s. That's when he was, listening to them, and he'd buy them. And it was...
That's cool.
Amanda, when was your first introduction to the Beach Boys?
When I was a little girl, we had a jukebox in our basement. And my dad had a lot of stuff from, the 60s and the 70s, and He had a bunch of Beach Boys, and then my favorites were Good Vibrations and Surfing USA. And we had a bunch of couches out, so we'd like get on the couch and kind of like the Surfing USA thing, and you know.
I love jukeboxes, and it would actually pick up the record.
Yeah, it was
put
a
it down.
Wulitzer. Yeah, it was one from the 50s.
Yep. Wow.
So it was a really
awesome
thing.
That's cool. Yeah, so it was...
don't have any more.
Rick, your first experience?
Well, I grew up, you know, and I was a little boy, and I'm from California, so that was the sound of summer to me when I was little, a little kid. I'm talking 7 years old, seven, 8 years old. I mean, I grew up listening to these guys on the radio, and I always liked them. When I really started to really appreciate them, well, this is kind of a weird thing, but I saw American Graffiti.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And this very last song, and that was one of the best soundtracks ever. It was all these popular 60s songs in the 50s. And the very last song that was played on in the movie was the summer song.
Serpent Spray, or no?
Is that All Summer Long.
All Summer Long, yeah.
Anyway, so I really thought, God, what a cool song. And then when I got the soundtrack and the LP, I'd come home from school, I'd just go to that last song every day for like 3 weeks.
Wow.
I just wanted to hear that song. I'm like, man, these guys are awesome. And then when the movie Shampoo came out, I saw this in 1975, and I saw that, and I just said, yeah, wouldn't it be nice as like an awesome song, man? So I went and got the 45.
Yeah.
So I bought the 45. It was a reissue because the movie came out. It was a really popular movie. So they reissued that song, Wouldn't It Be Nice? So it had Wouldn't It Be Nice on one side and Carol I Know on the other, which is which is both from this album, Pet Sounds. Also, I saw the Beach Boys with Chicago up in Oakland, The Day on the Green in 1975.
Wow.
And that was just this amazing, these two gigantic bands together. Yeah. And once I saw that, once I saw them, I became a huge fan.
Yeah.
So ever since then, of course, you know.
I got to give one other memory. You actually, for me saying about the sounds of summer, is my summer sound is 1976. Oh, you can correct me on the year. Rick knows everything about it, but he'll correct me. But 1976, I'm going to say. And my brother Larry had this Plymouth Duster with an 8-track player, and he had the 8-track he had was 15 big ones.
That's 76, yeah.
76?
Yeah.
I was right. I remember Rocky.
That was the comeback album. It was the Brian Wilson's comeback album.
And it was, and we would play the crap out of that thing, and we would drive around in this muscle Duster, and I mean, it burned oil, and it was piece of crap.
Well,
but it was we would blare the Beach Boys coming out of that.
Do you remember the double like greatest hits album that came out around that time too? It was around 76, 75, 76. It was maybe 75, but it was the Capitol Records did like a double album.
Yeah.
Again, an 8-track. And just, it was all hits.
Uh-huh.
It was Endless Summer, it was called.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, it was a painting on the album cover was like a painting.
Weird paintings of the guys. That's the one I have autographed by all of them.
Wow.
That one. The one I have in the frame here in the bar. We have it up.
Awesome.
It's around the corner by the men's room.
But
anyway, so I became this huge fan. And then it wasn't until later that I really, when CDs started coming out, I started getting everything. And then became huge into them and wanted to know all their history and started reading up on them. And I met Brian Wilson finally. What year was that? 1990, I think it was.
Yeah. Okay, this is what I'm curious about. So I loved the music, and the Beach Boys were like a staple in Michigan, Pine Knob. They would be there every summer, and they would play. And I had no clue of all the drama and the drugs and the stuff.
Yeah.
Like, when did you become aware of that?
When I met my friend David Leaf, who wrote the best book ever on the Beach Boys, it's called the California. Let me see. It's called The Beach Boys and the California Myth. The Beach Boys and the California Myth. Anyway, he wrote and I got to know him, and he would tell me stuff.
Yeah.
Because he had to live with these guys for a couple of years and write the story. And it's kind of weird because it's like, I mean, although I was really interested to hear a lot of this stuff, I'm not going to even go into a lot of the stories, but it's like, you don't want to think of them as having all these problems. You want to think of them as just making great music, which they did for a long time, but. Boy, there was a lot of drama. The dad, you know, Murray, the dad, was this tyrant, and what he did to those, you know, psychologically to the three Wilson brothers, Brian, Carl, and Dennis.
You know, okay, good. I'm glad Amanda's a psychology major because you can. Here's my theory about that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is if you got an abusive father,
like never grow up.
He had, right. Like, Michael Jackson got his abuse when he was 11. Mm-hmm. So he stayed 11.
Yeah.
You just kind of become stagnant. You're just too terrified to become an adult and learn responsibility.
And Brian Wilson got his abuse when he was 18.
No, he's the oldest, yeah, because he was the oldest.
18, 19.
He was harder on Brian
and, than if you meet him today, and I've met him and you've met him, mm-hmm. it's like you're talking to an 18-year-old.
That's how I. When people ask me what's he like, I said, well, he's really nice.
Yeah.
But he's sort of like talking to a teenager.
Right.
I mean, the way he talks and the things he talks about and just his sort of attitude and.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's my theory about abuse. Is that like grounded in some?
But some I think part of
real psychology.
Well, and like especially in like. Child development, when you're talking about, I know he was older, but yeah, that kind of stuff, you know, it actually is more detrimental mental abuse than physical abuse. Mm-hmm. Physical abuse, you can get over, you can move away, but the stuff that goes on mentally, it never really goes away.
I think a lot of Brian's problem, because he grew up in, up until probably the mid 70s, he was well, I shouldn't say mid 70s, before that, but he was okay. I mean, as an adult, I think the drugs, doing a lot
but
of drugs.
When did he quit touring?
He quit in 64.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a good sign.
No, yeah. He had an emotional breakdown.
Right.
In an airplane.
Not a good sign.
In an airplane before they took off. And he says, like, I can't take this anymore. I'm not going to tour. I'm just going to stay home and do the records. And he was okay up until the 67 when he started doing Smile. And that's when things started going really weird. He started taking lots of drugs. And then he never really was the same after that.
Right.
I kind of heard about it when there was a Bare Naked Ladies song where one of the lines is like, lying in bed like Brian Wilson. And I was like, what is that? And the boy guy that I was seeing at the time had to explain to me. He's like, well, with Brian Wilson had these problems and he just got out of bed for like years.
In bed,
and
he did for like three.
It wasn't as long as, he got out of bed. But I mean, basically, he just had to stay in his room the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
For probably about a year.
Yeah,
I'm not,
but he got up to like 300 pounds, right?
Yeah, he got really huge. So in 76, they brought Dr. Landy in, who was a psychologist, to get him healthy again and get him on an exercise program, cut out the drugs, cut out the cigarettes. He smoked cigarettes like crazy, which is why his voice on that 15 Big Ones is really hoarse.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he got him back into shape so they could basically wanted to go on tour and do more albums. So they said, we got to get Brian into shape, otherwise you can't get a record deal.
Right.
As well as he's our brother, we want to save his life, and you know, we want him to be, want him to be well. So, anyway, they got him back into in decent enough shape where they could put albums out. It didn't really stick, and then he
kind of got
regressed.
Instead of being addicted to drugs, he got addicted to Dr. Landy.
Yeah, which Dr. Landy helped.
Right.
There's a word I'm thinking of. I can't think of that right now. He helped.
But that's kind of what people
accelerate.
Do. When you lose it, you get a new addiction. Right?
Yeah, he.
Whether it's
Landy made him dependent on himself, him, and he wanted to keep him away from the family, and just to be dependent on him. And it was a whole. This could be a 4-hour podcast about that. But anyway, he's away from Landy. He got away from Landy. The brothers.
They sued him, right?
They had a restraining order because Landy wanted to be not only his psychologist, psychiatrist, but. Co-producer, co-writer.
Yeah, go to.
It was like Rasputin.
If you go to YouTube, there's some things of Landy and Brian Wilson talking, and he's always got his arm around Brian.
Yeah,
and he's always like, it's like an emotional.
It's kind of creepy.
It's a physical kind of
right. Thing. I'll tell you when I met Brian, he was still with Landy.
Really,
the first time I met him, they had a studio together called Brains of Genius, and at this time, the brothers weren't. The other Beach Boys weren't allowed around him.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know the secretary, and I wanted to meet Brian. She goes, well, you just come on down. And, you know, I talked to her on the phone and stuff. She got to know I wasn't crazy or whatever. I wasn't a fanatic. So she arranged for me to come and meet him. And that was, I guess, kind of unusual because Landy was really particular who would talk to Brian. But I guess I got the okay for whatever reason. So I went down to meet him. And it's a whole long story, but he was just, he goes, well, let me show you what I'm working on, you know, basically, you know, and I was like in awe of this guy. It's like, oh my God, I mean, he goes, come on, I'll show you what I'm working on. This is after he'd already done one solo album, he's working on another one. And so he goes, come on back here. And we walked through this weird dark area, like it was almost like a room that wasn't finished or something. We're going through these, almost like between the walls, and that sounds weird, and it was like completely dark.
Yeah.
He goes, watch your step. There's a lot of wires and stuff over here. I said, all right. And I'm walking, it's completely dark. And then he stopped, and there was a piano off to the side. And he goes, here, I'll play you something. And he goes, let me play it. So he starts playing Proud Mary, that old Creedence song. Starts playing that, and I can't see him. It's black. It's completely dark. I can barely see the piano because I think the piano was white or something. He goes, you want to hear something? And I said, yeah. Can you play God Only Knows? All right. So he starts playing God Only Knows, which is like the greatest Beach Boys song ever. And I can't even see him. I'm like, Brian Wilson's playing just for me, and I can't see it. You know. So he starts playing it, and then he stops. And he goes, well, you know how the rest of it goes. And
wow.
Then he gets up, and I follow him into his recording room, and then he starts playing all these tapes and stuff. And then he came to Disney after that. He goes, you're an animator. I want to know how that works. How do you do that? And I said, well, just come to the studio, and I'll, you know, anytime you want. He goes, okay, when? I said, whenever you want. So his assistant said, yeah, I'll call you in a few weeks and we'll come by. So he actually did come to the studio. I came to Disney. We walked into the building, the animation building. And he comes in my room. And he's in my room and I'm flipping scenes. I was working on Aladdin at the time. I'm showing scenes of Abu, right? And he's like, man, that's groovy. And he goes, and after I showed, he goes, now the magic's over. He said, now I know how it works. He starts asking me how much money I make. Anyway, while we're in there talking to him, people are walking by my office, and they're like double taking. They're like walking by, stopping, and coming back, and I'm looking in like, why is Brian Wilson in Rick's room? You know, that kind of stuff. But he was really, really cool. And I had a poster of him in my room, and he signed it for me and stuff.
Cool.
And somebody brought another celebrity kind of up.
And then about a month later, a friend of mine, Mike Cedeno, brought in David Crosby. He goes, oh, I know David Crosby. So he brings David Crosby to the studio. It's like, okay, we're doing rock star trades here. But I'll tell you really quickly, unless you have something else to say, I'll tell you how I started working with him. Anyway, I got to know him. I mean, David Luke is a really good friend of mine. David is really, really tight with Brian and his biographer, basically. And so I'd go to the shows and I'd meet Brian backstage and stuff. So finally, he knew I was an animator, and finally we got to a project where I could actually work for him, and it was that Lucky Old Son. They had this narration on the album, and they wanted to do a live show in London and have visuals for his narration. When the narration is being read, there's no music. So it's like, it's just taped his narration of different parts of L.A. The whole album was about L.A., the freeways, the beaches, different things. So he wanted illustrations. So I said, I'll do animation for those bits. And they're like 30 seconds long each. So I was able to do that. So they'd send me the lyrics, and I'd do storyboards. And I'd show them. So one of the coolest things, actually my emotional high on the whole project, was a lot of work, way more work than I thought it was. But I loved it. As the fact I'm working with Brian, it was like so cool. And it was stressful because I had a deadline, you know, and we had to get it done in time because we're going to go to London, and I had to send some of the DVDs on a plane. And
I remember that.
It's crazy. You remember when I was doing it?
Yeah, Rick, you had to make some changes.
Yeah.
And we had to email
literally
them
last
to
minute.
London.
Yeah.
For the show, which was going to be in London.
Like that night.
That night.
It was crazy.
It was night here,
yeah,
and it was morning in London, and they're like, we're going to do the show in 8 hours.
Yeah,
Rick has to make these changes.
DVDs aren't working. This is the wrong format, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, it's going to work. So I had to make new ones really quick and ship them over there. Like,
right.
I had to go to
we went to an FTP server. They downloaded it.
Remember that? Yeah.
It was crazy, and it was like, and then it was we did it, and it was like it worked. And it was like
it worked.
He did the Queen's Jubilee, right? Or
yeah,
something, right?
Yeah, and it
was
worked.
Like he did this thing at the Palladium in London.
So like,
the coolest thing
for me was, speaking of God Only Knows, was I did all these storyboards. And, you know, I mostly worked with Melinda, his wife. And she said, well, we kind of want this and this. And I would talk to her on the phone and ask her what she wanted and stuff. So, you know, I finally got the boards into shape. And Van Dyke Parks was involved. Van Dyke Parks was the guy who wrote the lyrics.
Right.
And Van Dyke Parks was who Brian wrote with for Smile, as well as, like, Source Up and Good Vibrations.
Yeah.
Okay? Anyway. I don't know. Actually, I'm sorry. He didn't write Good Vibrations with Brian. But anyway, he was,
well, that was
around that period.
Right?
Yeah. So, anyway, he's going to be there. And Brian's there. And I'm like, oh, wow. So I have to pitch these storyboards to Brian, his wife, Van Dyke Parks and his wife, and me. That's it. It's like, what if they don't like these? So I go up to the door, and Brian's at the door. Hey, Rick! He like opens the door before I even get to this front. Hey, Rick! And he goes, come here! And so I walk him. He goes, shake my, give me a shake my hand. So I give me a hug. Okay, come in. So I go in there, and they're having, it's not a brunch, and we had like coffee and stuff. So then I have to pitch these storyboards to these guys. I'm like, and on my left is Van Dyke Parks, and on my right's Brian, and then the wives are on their other side. And I'm like, and so I'm pitching these boards, and they're like, oh, it's good. And I'm thinking, and then for a moment, I'm taking myself out of what I'm doing and looking at myself. It's like I'm pitching my storyboards to Brian Wilson and Van Dyke Parks.
Right.
I mean, just the hugeness of that. Yeah. Of just like these guys are like geniuses, and I'm showing them my stuff, you know. Anyway, so I get all done, and they just like break into applause, and Brian's like, "Rick's a genius. Rick's a genius." And they loved them. You know, they had one little. I think Van Dyke Parks' wife had one little note on something, but basically they were going crazy, and I'm like, this is as good as it's going to get. I realized emotionally it won't get better than this.
That's awesome.
To be here with him. And, I mean, and then the rest of it was just work and getting it done.
And you got to be thinking about the first time you ever heard a Beach Boys song and you were 10.
A lot of times I was, when I'd be right in the middle of this stuff and trying to get this stuff done on time and do it the way Melinda wanted it, how she pictured it, and trying to rush this stuff in time. And I'm like, I'm really stressing out because it's the middle of summer. It's really hot. And I'm thinking, I'm doing this for Brian Wilson. I'm doing this for Brian. This is because I just love this guy so much. I love his music. I don't care. I don't care if I ever do anything again. If they don't like it, I'm doing it now, and I'm going to do the best I can. And it's because it's him, and I'm doing this for him, basically. It's what got me through it, you know. Anyway, so it came out, and Melinda loved it. And I mean, I'm not saying it's great, but
it's great. I thought,
it does what it's supposed to do. It does what it's supposed to do. And so, you know, and I've seen him since then at shows and stuff. And you know, it's I have a piece of
That's awesome.
I'm part of something that he did.
Rick and I were also part of something where we snuck into a Brian Wilson party. Like you talked to David Leaf. We were at UCLA for a benefit for his brother Carl Wilson. He died of a brain
cancer.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they have a benefit. They still have it every year?
I don't know. I think they probably do, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, so we went there, and Rick and I were there, and just you and me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were there, and we saw... Courtney Cox, and who else do we see in there?
So we talked to Cameron Crowe.
Cameron Crowe was there, and Hart was there, and Cameron's wife, wife.
Yeah, Hart, yeah.
And so we're like, we need to be in that party. And so we snuck our way, and we put fake badges on, right?
Uh-huh.
We had these plastic wristbands, and we each put a wristband on.
Uh-huh.
That we found.
The fact that it said Band-Aid on it, nobody really looked at it.
And we went in. But I will cut to the chase, which is Rick, Bijou Phillips, the daughter of Michelle Phillips,
and Sean Lennon
the son of John Lennon, and Carney Wilson, the daughter of Brian Wilson, doing tequila shots,
yep.
And Brian comes over and says, "What are you guys doing here?" and we did tequila shots. Now, you've met Brian. Your opinion, Amanda?
The same. It's, you know, he's like a teenager. I'd say even less than 18. You know, he just kind of...
Really? Give him 18, will you?
He's like, how excited he gets about stuff and how he'll be talking about one thing. All of a sudden, he shifts to their tangent.
He doesn't like crowds. He doesn't like the after parties. He just
he gets worked up after a while. Like after I'm done.
You and I went to where did we see him play on Sunset? The Troubadour? The Roxy. We went to the Roxy.
That was awesome.
And saw him play. It was great. And you talked to him. We talked to him after the show. Rick talked to him after the show. And he's like, I remember this. As he says. I'm going to go to England and play for the Queen, and I'm going to take an airplane.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
See, that's what I mean. That's like a 10-year-old would be all
Do you know what he said when he met the Queen?
What?
"Hi, Queen." I swear to God, that's what he said. He said, "Hi, Queen."
Okay, that's
10. Queen.
That's like a Leave It to Beaver thing. That's like something Beaver would do. Anyway, it's cool. What's cool about going to his shows and stuff is that everybody who likes him comes to see him. And it's like, especially earlier when because he hadn't done anything for years. He never appeared live. And then when he started to kind of come out and play live,
right.
I mean, you know, Rodney Bingenheimer, the guy from the Knack that just passed away.
Mark Knopfler. No.
I forgot his name, and I feel really bad.
Feiger.
Doug Feiger. Tons of people. But yeah. All these people that worshipped him would come out and watch him. So you'd see all these Rob Schneider was at the Rock. Yeah, he was.
And Danny DeVito.
You know what?
And which made me seem really tall. But the
who's the guy that was at the Wiltern? I forget his name. He's Canadian. He was in Second City, I think. He used to do the... Oh, I can't remember his name.
Harold Ramis, Dave Thomas, Eugene Levy.
Nope. He used to be on Saturday Night Live, too. I forget his name. It's not important.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, a lot of people come out to see him. And,
that's cool.
You know, it's been a great...
If Brian Wilson comes to your area... Touring. In fact, he played in Ottawa on his birthday.
Yeah.
He had a concert.
Yesterday, yeah.
But he played, he still toured with the Wondermints?
Well, the Wondermints are his backing band.
Yeah. They're awesome.
The Wondermints are a great band on their own.
I mean, but they sing all the, I mean, if you
they
go
know
there.
All the parts. They
this
know
is
all
what
the
This is what I would recommend, is just experience the music and the whole thing. Brian sits at the piano. I mean, for the Beach Boys, he played bass and he played piano, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he sits at the piano, and he may not play the piano that night.
No, I think he does, but...
I mean, once in a while, he'll touch the keys, but pretty much he sits there and sings.
Yeah.
And which is awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, but he's the guy, every song that the Wondermints play and sing, and they sound great...
I'll tell you something else. I'll tell you another really high moment for me was they were rehearsing Smile. Okay, when they were going to do the new version of it. They're finally going to put the album out. And David Leaf invited me to the rehearsal. And we went to the soundstage in Burbank. And watching him put together all the vocals together and direct the people doing the vocals, I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing. I mean, you think he's like, oh, this guy can't do it anymore, but he knew exactly the sounds he wanted. He said, you're going to sing this part. You see, all of a sudden, he turns into something else. He turns into the Brian Wilson that you all have heard about.
And one of the most amazing things is he's deaf in one ear, right? There's right ear he can't hear.
Almost deaf, yeah.
And he's made all those harmonies. I mean, the Beach Boys in stereo was awesome with the harmonies, and there were voices coming from all over the room.
Yep.
And he's never, ever heard
that. He doesn't really know it's true
he
stereo.
He has no idea how good
that
stuff is.
Stuff put together, yep.
And
he had the best musicians. He had the wrecking crew of the 1960s working, recording all, like, Pet Sounds and stuff. Yeah. He had the best guys.
Yeah.
The best guys, you know, he would put them, they'd rehearse and record, take after take till it was exactly the way he heard it in his head.
Which is probably more amazing is, so you've got this guy with obviously mental problems. He does have mental issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Drug problems. He can't hear, and he's making this great, awesome music.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, but anyway, well, that's good to end on, I think.
So anyway, he's still
out there.
He just put out a Gershwin album several months ago.
The end of the story right now, just for you people that, because there's plenty of tragedies in Hollywood, is Brian lives in about a $9 million house. He lives in a beautiful house, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
he lives in
Beverly Hills.
It's not like the Beverly Hillbillies mansion. You know, it's not like that, but it's a beautiful house.
He's fine.
He's very happy.
He's happy.
His wife, Melinda, is amazing. Yep. She loves him.
She makes it so his life is good.
I mean, she makes it so he can just... She takes care of all the business stuff, and he just creates music. It's like perfect.
Yeah.
So he just seems really happy.
The sad part of his life was in the middle.
Long gone.
It's past it. He's happy.
He's very happy.
He's doing what he's doing. He may be dumb and happy. He may be that he's happy. And if you get a chance to see him and just that music is amazing.
Yep.
So thank you for joining us for Rick's Martini Bar. This is our longest podcast.
On his birthday. Well, that's okay. He's 69 years old. It's going to be longer than 10 minutes.
Deserves it. And so anyway, I got to talk about our sponsors, PV Imaging. If you go to our website, you can log on there. Do some business with PV Imaging and support this podcast.
Do some business with us.
And does some business with us. And audible.com, you can download an audiobook. David Lee, who Rick mentioned, is a friend of Rick's, does a great biography of Harry Nilsson.
Oh, yeah.
And
what's the name of it? It just came out on DVD a while ago. It's called
Everybody's Harry, Talking. Who's Harry Nelson and Why Is Everybody Talking About Him?
Right.
Because he wrote the Everybody's Talking
and
About
Me. That's, pick that up. Pick
yeah,
that
it's
up.
Great. It's great. So check that out. And for Amanda Raymond, Rick Farmelo, and me, Jerry Bacardi.
And happy birthday, Brian.
Happy birthday, Brian. Cheers.
Until next time.